Matriculating through Monday morning, 9:09. Rafael Goyeneche joins us now, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. How you doing, Rafael?
I'm fine, Tommy. How are you?
Well, you know, I was doing okay up until, I guess, about a minute left in the Atlanta game yesterday, and then it seems like...
2 seconds left. Yeah. 2 seconds.
Seems like... Yeah. Well, I was talking about when Atlanta, when they kicked off. It's like I kind of knew what was going to happen.
Okay.
Did you?
Right. Actually, no. I mean, I was maybe a little bit more optimistic. I thought we'd pull it out. Mm-hmm. I mean, we don't give up a... the defense doesn't allow a touchdown. Can we lose by a point? That's a crime. That's a crime. Yeah.
I had Youngway Koo-Vu because I knew what was going to happen. That kicker is solid, man. Let's talk about the consent decree first, and then I'll move on to some other things. How close is the city to getting out of the consent decree, and how much of a – are you on a headset or something, Rafael?
No, actually, I'm driving.
Okay.
Right
you're on so Bluetooth?
Sorry.
That's all right. That's okay.
Yes.
We'll make it work. We don't want anything to happen bad to you. Maybe turn something down or the other. I don't know. Let's talk about the city exiting the consent decree.
Well, I think the city is on the fast path to substantial compliance. So all of that is positive. I think that the police department, yes, can you hear me?
Yes, sir, you're doing fine.
Okay, yeah. So really what we're seeing right now is the Justice Department and the city of New Orleans are in agreement that the city is in substantial compliance. That is a major accomplishment because this whole process has been adversarial. And the city has convinced the Justice Department that they are in substantial compliance. Now we have to convince the judge that they're in substantial compliance. So what this filing from Friday indicates is that, as I just said, we're on the path. The judge will set this up for a hearing and allow the public to come in and agree or dissent with whether the city is in substantial compliance. And ultimately, she will make the decision as to whether or not they're in substantial compliance. If she rules that the city is in substantial compliance, it doesn't mean that the consent decree is over. It just means we go into the next two-year phase of wind down. And during that 2 years, the city and the police department has to maintain substantial compliance. So this has been 12 years in the making. This is an accomplishment on Friday. We still have a ways to go, but we could begin the wind down phase possibly before the end of the year. This can be scheduled for that hearing in federal court. So it's an accomplishment.
So this is a legal proceeding, and I'm just wondering, I'm looking at an article here by Mike Perlstein, says the federal intervention began when the DOJ sued the city 2012 to force improvements inside of a department that had been riddled with corruption, brutality, civil rights violations, bias policing, and cronyism. I'm just wondering, from the Metropolitan Crime Commission's standpoint, how many improvements have been made? How do you compare and contrast the department now and then? And Rafael, as a follow-up question, I guess, considering this is all a negotiation, right? Where do the personalities involve and the fact that the relationship has been, as you just said, adversarial factor in all of this?
Well, so, keep in mind, really the tipping point was Katrina, post-Katrina, the Danziger Bridge incident, and several other incidents in and around Katrina. That was the tipping point where the Department of Justice had been monitoring the police department going back before Richard Pennington got here. And ultimately, that's when the Department of Justice concluded that the police department was incapable of righting itself. They entered into the consent decree rather than... They hadn't entered into consent decree, the Department of Justice would have petitioned the court or a federal takeover of the police department. So where we are right now, the fact that we're on the cusp of substantial compliance, it's all based on data. Okay. The police department has been capturing data and measuring compliance in every component of that document, of that consent decree. So every paragraph has a metric attached to it, and the police department has learned how to collect that data, interpret that data, and to use that data to maintain constitutional policing practices in the city of New Orleans. The real measure of the success of this consent decree isn't right now or even 2 years when the consent decree ends, if we meet that deadline. It's going to be 5 years after the Department of Justice goes away. Because what we saw was the department has been on a roller coaster ride. It will go through periods where things are getting better, and then they will take their foot off the accelerator, and we begin to drift down the hill. So we saw what happens when we allow the department to drift down the hill. This is a never-ending process where the police department, rather than the Department of Justice, needs to make sure that their policies, practices, and procedures are a part of the culture of the police department now and in the years going forward.
So it wasn't that long ago when the city, you know, said enough is enough, and you talk about the adversarial nature of it. I'm just wondering, is the change now because of what Ann Kirkpatrick has done, either in an objective way or in a subjective way with the relationships between the DOJ and NOPD and now ultimately Judge Susie Morgan?
Well, I believe that the police department, were it not for the practices of the city and more particularly the mayor, would have been in substantial compliance sometime in late 22 or early 23. And what Ann Kirkpatrick did was convince the mayor that any thought that she had of attempting to litigate her way into substantial compliance was not going to achieve the desired goal. So once Ann Kirkpatrick got here, she was able to convince the mayor to allow the superintendent to allow her to navigate the police department into substantial compliance. We were close to it before, till the mayor decided enough is enough. I'm going to tell the city attorney and our private attorneys we're going to litigate this thing and end the consent decree. And every effort to do that, delayed substantial compliance, has proven to be unsuccessful. And the fact that we're knocking on the door of substantial compliance is, I think, the mayor allowing Ann Kirkpatrick to do what she knows how to do, and that's lead the department, including through the consent decree process.
Is there any way to put a dollar figure on what that a couple of years of delay because of the arrogance of the mayor, I'll just say it, that's what I'm thinking, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but the arrogance of the mayor could have cost the city as far as this goes?
I don't know off the top of my head, but, you know, when you factor in the money that we're paying for the federal monitors plus the legal fees involved in all this, you know, we're looking at probably approaching, you know, seven digits, $1 million plus.
So, generally speaking, and I'm no Rafael Goyeneche by any means, believe me, but when you try to impose your will upon a federal judge that's appointed for life, that rarely ends happy, does it?
No, that's not a recipe for success. And everybody realized that, and Kirkpatrick realized that, to her credit, she was able to convince the mayor that she has this, let her do it, she'll get us through it. And the mayor, you know, let Ann Kirkpatrick take the reins, and that's why we are where we are right now.
And I'm just a dumb guy from the West Bank, so you think if I could figure that out, well, let me take a break, Rafael. When we come back, I want to talk to you about the Randy Farrell thing and the indictment that happened on Friday afternoon, and then we'll talk to David Hammer about that as well. Rafael Goyeneche, our guest president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. You know, again, rule of thumb, force your will on a federal judge? Nah, probably not the best idea. We'll take a break, come back, WWL. 925, talking to Rafael Goyeneche, our friend, President of Metropolitan Crime Commission. Rafael, before we move on to Randy Farrell, somebody texted in about the, and I don't want to get too far into the weeds on this, but where Judge Susie Morgan factors into this and the Department of Justice, and what exactly happened and what are the steps next to get out of this consent decree?
Okay, so the Department of Justice and the City of New Orleans issued a joint motion last week, asking the judge to move the City of New Orleans into substantial compliance. So both parties to the litigation, the city and the Department of Justice, are in agreement that the city should be placed into substantial compliance. The judge will now schedule a hearing, and the judge will review all of the metrics. The city submitted a compliance plan to maintain compliance. She will review all of that, conduct the hearing, and then make a decision whether to place the City of New Orleans and the police department into substantial compliance. When and if she does that, that begins the two-year wind-down phase, with the department over 2 years has to maintain compliance before the consent decree ends.
With all that being said, I know there's just speculation on your part, but how important is it, and I'm asking this question, for continuity's sake and to make sure there's no backsliding, et cetera, and everything continues to proceed smoothly, that Ann Kirkpatrick remain in place?
Well, so Ann Kirkpatrick's main accomplishment was getting the mayor to stop her flawed policy, her ineffective policy of trying to litigate her way out of it. The police department set up all of the metrics before Ann Kirkpatrick arrived to measure their compliance with the consent decree. That capability is critical to maintaining compliance, both during the consent decree, during the wind-down period, and after the consent decree goes away. What isn't measured, is, an indication. That's the old ways. That's what got us into the consent decree. The police department took their eye off the ball in making sure that they just didn't have policies and procedures, but those policies and procedures were actually being followed. So the blueprint to maintaining compliance, Ann Kirkpatrick, no police chief is going to be there permanently.
Right.
So it's critically important to establish the culture internally and the mechanisms internally to maintain compliance after the consent decree goes away. That mechanism is in place right now, just needs to be measured and maintained by the police department.
So let me ask it this way. On a scale of 1 to 5, 5 being difference maker, 1 being no difference at all, where would Ann Kirkpatrick fit into the change with the consent decree since she came in?
Well, we would not be in this position were it not for Ann Kirkpatrick.
Okay.
Because until Ann Kirkpatrick arrived, the mayor was still hell-bent on trying to litigate her way, huff and puff, and try and intimidate Judge Morgan into declaring the city in substantial compliance with the consent decree. That didn't work, and it wasn't going to work. And if the city was maintaining that position, we wouldn't be in the position that we now sit this morning.
So would it be accurate to say the influence was not as much on NOPD because they had already taken the right steps as to change the mayor's mindset and the proper way to go about it?
Yes, okay. I get that. That's a better way of saying it. Absolutely.
Right. Let me real quick ask you about, because we're going to talk to David Hammer about this, WWL Louisiana investigative reporter. Your thoughts on Randy Farrell being indicted that could directly implicate Mayor Cantrell in a criminal conspiracy?
Well, the only thing that I think has yet to happen is the mayor to be indicted. But this is the next step in her being indicted. And I believe that Friday's indictment of Randy Farrell, the document itself refers to Public Official 1 and Public Official 2. Public Official 1 is the mayor. public official two is the CAO of the city of New Orleans. So Randy Farrell, you know, in the indictment, is accused of bestowing gifts on public official one and public official two in an attempt to get them to use their official duties for the benefit of Randy Farrell. So go back and look at the fact that Randy Farrell was indicted for tax fraud in connection with his business, and he's paying back the government right now $1 million in back taxes. That speaks to the business, the scale of the business that he was operating. And according to the indictment, Randy Farrell influenced Public Official 1 and Public Official 2 to terminate Jennifer Cecil, who is in charge of permitting at One Stop. And by discharging her, she was giving Jennifer Cecil, was making life miserable for Randy Farrell and his company. She was on to what he was doing. And so Randy Farrell, according to this indictment, bribed or provided inducements, financial inducements and gifts to Public Official 1 and Public Official 2 to terminate Jennifer Cecil, which allowed him to continue his profitable business that we now know he's paying $1 million in restitution to the government on taxes that he didn't pay. So I think that the next step, in the question of if, it's when the mayor is going to be indicted. I believed it before Friday. Friday, I think, indicates that it's even more imminent than it was before that indictment. But it's inevitable, and I think the mayor realizes that it's coming. It's just a matter of not if, but when.
And when it comes to these type of proceedings with the federal government, is Randy Farrell a target, or is he likely to flip, or has he flipped, or do we know?
No. I mean, he's been indicted, so he's going to be held accountable. It takes, you know, it's a crime to accept a bribe, but it's also a crime to offer a bribe. And he's accused of not just bribing Public Official 1 and Public Official 2. He's accused of wire fraud, which was, you know, he was certifying and conducting inspections that were fraudulent. And every one of those documents that was sent via the Internet was a wire fraud. So that was his business, in allowing unlicensed contractors to receive permits that they wouldn't have been eligible. Jennifer Cecil with the city of New Orleans was aware of that and pointing that out and giving him trouble. And we now know in this indictment that the government has his cell phone records. We know from the Vappy investigation that the government had Officer Vappy's cell phone records and the mayor's cell phone records. So this case is being built in large part on the text messages, voice communications, and data from the mayor's phone, Randy Farrell's phone, Officer Vappy's phone, and probably other unnamed, unknown individuals. So it's not going to be just testimonial evidence. It's going to be digital evidence, information, and evidence of crime being perpetrated by the mayor, from the mayor's own phone, from Randy Farrell's own phone, and that's going to be some of the evidence that is going to, has resulted in Farrell's indictment, and I believe will be instrumental in the mayor being indicted.
Thank you, Raphael. Appreciate your time as always. Raphael Goyeneche, President of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. We're going to dig deep into this with David Hammer, WWL Louisiana Chief Investigative Reporter, when we come back. 9:34, time now for traffic, WWL.